Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, May 7th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 154. I am your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, it's nice out today. It's beautiful.
It is. Like, this is, we kind of been doing good weather check-ins lately because it's getting to be nice weather time. But this is like, I'm happy with this weather. It's great.
Yeah.
Also joining me, I don't know how the weather, I heard it was hot up there, Rob Zachney, in Boston all weekend.
Yeah, it was extremely warm and uncomfortable and terrible.
It is now hovering between 70 and 50 today. So like, I'm living it. Patrick Klepek also joining us today on the phone.
Hello.
On the phone, on the telephone.
Sure. Uh-huh. Whatever you want to call it.
I call it an internet telephone. That's what I call it. That's what IT stands for, you know?
Internet telephone.
How's everybody doing today besides it's nice out?
It's all right.
I mean,
very enthusiastic response. Let's get some energy up in here. I'm going to need to hold a fucking pep rally.
I took a sip of water thinking someone else would chime in, and then Danielle just sounded like she was drowning as she responded.
God, great. I love
it. And this, the week of Donkey Kong, no less. Like, that's the best you can do.
We talked Donkey Kong on Friday, so she's already got the Donkey Kong. She already got all the Kong out of her system.
I mean, I have a few more bonus levels to find. I guess there's a little more Donkey Kong in my system. A little more Donkey in my blood, you know?
Yeah, I guess I know. Does anyone else ever have any donkey in their blood? Is that a thing?
I mean, it's new to me, but I would say, like, I have learned a lot about funkiness since starting to play Tropical Freeze.
Oh, are you playing it too?
You're playing it?
Yeah. I've just started playing it, but I'm a little concerned because I see things, but I can't get to them. Mm-hmm. And then I can still complete the level.
That's normal.
But it's like, hey, there were these things that you saw and you couldn't get to them. Yeah, but I feel like I failed every time I complete a level because it's like I didn't complete Kong.
Right. Like, I would recommend giving up on I've actually chosen to do that as someone that like normally is into collectibles in these sorts of games, and I don't like the way this game implements them, and I found it's better just to just kind of enjoy. Like, you'll get plenty of joy out of the level design if you just get what you can kind of get, be satisfied with that, and then just keep moving forward. Because
that's great, Patrick. I'm going to put you in touch with my therapist, and I think that's a good direction for me to go. And
you're going to be you're going to be frustrated like if you go to any sort of completionist tendencies because this game. Like, you're not going to enjoy it.
Let me offer a counterpoint. Rob, this game is so good that it's actually worth you spending time finding the extra stuff. Because it's not just, like, doodads and bullshit that you get. I forget if it's the Kong letters or the puzzle pieces. It's one or the other.
It's
look
both.
It up. Well, look it up in terms of what actually gets you bonus levels.
Oh.
I forget exactly.
Oh, God, there's
but there
unlocked
are actual
content.
Bonus levels, like the real thing that you want. So, like, enjoy yourself, pace yourself, don't hurt yourself, but like, look up the one that's actually going to give you bonus levels and go for that one because they're so good. They're really good. It's a good
game. What are the bonus levels like? Is it just like, I know in Mario, you kind of get some like bonus levels that are really hard. In Mario games, it's kind of a thing. I'm curious what are Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze bonus levels like?
They're really good. I mean, so there's bonus levels that are you find by doing secret exits, and those are really beautiful. Patrick talked about them a little bit on Friday, but they're sort of silhouette levels, and they all take place in this, like, gorgeous... You can kind of see the outline of Donkey Kong, but everything is sort of shadowed, and it's... Oh, my God, it's really, really cool and beautiful. And then there are these sort of bonus levels you get by collecting everything. And again, I forget if it's puzzle pieces or the Kong letters because I haven't gotten all of them yet in my current playthrough, but I got most of them in my previous playthrough of the game a few years ago. And they are, they're just extra levels. They're just, they tend to be pretty difficult, actually. I mean, this entire game is difficult. It's not an easy game by any means. But I wonder if funky mode, it's worth trying that in funky mode. I'll just start a new game file today. I'll start a fourth game file today and I'll report back.
Yeah, I was confused by that, like, because it seems like funky mode would be the better experience, because, like, who doesn't want to be more funky?
Good point.
But at the same time, like, that's not the original experience, not the definitive Tropical Freeze that you've been talking about as long as I've known you, Danielle.
Known me before Tropical Freeze.
That's true. The game isn't as old. I always think, like, Donkey Kong Tropical, like, I have not paid attention to Donkey Kong since... What was the technology in the SNES days that we were all excited about?
Oh, the Mode 7?
No, or the FX chip? Or... Silicon Graphics? Was that it?
Well, but that was just a...
there's a lot of bullshit terms.
There was no special chip in the Donkey Kong Country cartridge, but Mode 7 is the one that actually had a modified cartridge. I don't believe that Donkey Kong Country, I believe, had a large... Like, it might have been the largest cartridge in order to fit the graphics, but I don't think there was anything special happening with the ability for it to display... Because, like, the CG was just 2D. It was 3D stuff, like, turned into a 2D
into
sprite.
A sprite. Yeah.
So that was all lies.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
The Kong still lies. A great game.
You know, like, you can't trust the Kong. He'll lie to you every fucking time, let me tell you. I don't understand so much about the Donkey Kong mythos. Like, so much I don't understand in terms of... Okay, so...
When did the Penguin War start?
Okay.
Good question.
That started. That's actually the new war.
Well, you actually know.
In Tropical, of course I know. These are like my favorite games ever. That one started in Tropical Freeze, so 4 years ago. Like the Penguin War stuff is like the new stuff. It was always previously the Kremlings, which remember King K. Rool, the big lizard guy.
Thing?
To be honest with you, I'm pretty sure, and maybe I'm making this up, but you know, whatever. That it's like a lizard brain, monkey brain thing. That it was always like your lizard brain, your previous brain.
I meant the word Kremlin. Is that like a Kremlin joke?
It probably is.
If you find out compromising information on Donkey Kong, is it called compromat?
Where's P-Tape Kong? Where's he?
Sure we could find the Kong who pisses or who
funky mode.
Pee-pee Kong. Is there Pee Pee Kong?
More real. Okay, here's a real question. Here's a real, actual, real question about the lore. I understand that Cranky Kong is the original Donkey Kong. Mm-hmm. I understand that Donkey Kong in Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze is Cranky Kong's grandson. Correct?
It's either that or his son.
My question is not about the family tree at all. Actually, my question is, how much time has there been between the original Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Country? And is Mario, are all the Mario games before, in the past of Donkey Kong Country then? Or does Mario not age?
Mario doesn't age because I don't think he's human. But
so he has spent the last, or does Cranky Kong age quickly?
I think Cranky Kong ages quickly because I'm pretty sure,
how long do apes
don't gorillas age more quickly than humans? Like, I think they become sexually mature at like a younger age than we do, so I think they age a little bit more quickly than us. Don't they?
I mean, I just suspect the life cycle of the great ape is probably not a useful guide to what the familial dynamics
here, Rob. We're using science.
Wait, why?
I don't know.
I'm just asking the questions here, Rob. You know, I'm just asking the questions that everyone wants to know. How long does a gorilla live? And then I'll put in parentheses, is it longer than Mario? ?
Okay. All right. Let's use science here today.
Gorillas live for like 50 years, 40 to 50 years, 35 to
shorter,
50 years.
Yeah. So much okay, shorter than a human up. Lifespan. Right. So I wasn't completely bananas.
All right, here's a follow-up. Yes. Mario is no longer a plumber, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right.
I think I just cracked the fucking case, because Mario also looks like way more fashionable in Mario Odyssey. He
wears all those different outfits. He shows his nipples.
Yeah, he shows his nipples, which is a very millennial thing to do. I think Mario might be Benjamin Buttoning.
Oh, he's getting younger.
It's not that he isn't a plumber. It's that he isn't a plumber yet.
But he's also a baby sometimes.
Right, that's in the far future when he's the tiniest he is.
I see. So Yoshi's Island takes place in the far future.
Right.
But and it came out the same year as Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Kong Quest, 1995.
Cranky Kong is an old man, which means that time, those they actually line up perfectly.
Yes, yes.
I think it all comes together. Thank you for I'm finally, I can care about Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. I found my angle in lore.
God. But yeah, it is definitely a cool game.
Yes.
I am struggling to master the various modes of movement that the Kong family unlocks over the course of the game, and depending on like what their context is, like
right.
That's all very cool, but yeah, like I'm having trouble I just don't have the makeup, I think, to get to that place of acceptance that Patrick is describing, where like I can just enjoy the fucking game, and then if I want to go back and like chase those exploratory goals.
So for one, let me just clarify, because I did some research in real time.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank that's you. Why you're a great journalist.
You can ignore safely all the puzzle pieces. All you get for all your trouble
is not the research I was hoping for. I was hoping for more lore research.
In the extras.
So it's the puzzle pieces, or sorry, the Kong letters that mean something that actually unlock things.
So yeah, so like the secret exits, those are interesting. Those get you cool levels. The Kong things, which are relatively easy to get, like all told, although really bothers me that you have to collect them all over again through a level. Like if you get three of them, the game doesn't save that. You have to go and do it again, which is terrible. That's an awful way to handle that. That is not what you should be doing. Like it actually
that's
actively
the most
made me
thing ever.
It made me not want to seek them out, because I was like, oh, I don't get rewarded for finding it the first time. If I come back to this level 10 hours from now, I have to do it all over again. Like, nah, like that's not the way this is supposed to work, video game. and then you can ignore the puzzle pieces. And in fact, if I could turn them off, I would. Because then even though I know they're worthless, if I get 6 of 7, I am annoyed that I made it to the end not having gotten 7, but I've just made peace with it, and I'm just, because otherwise I won't finish the game. Like otherwise I'm gonna get State of K2 is gonna come out. I'm just gonna move on to that, and I'd like to see more of this. And so like I'm just accepting that I don't like its implementation of collectibles, and just like moving forward to see more of what the game has.
That's fair. I just really want both of you to finish the game. Like whether or not you see all the extra stuff, like the level design, especially in the last world, is just, oh my god, it's so good. It's so good. So I just want you to get there. I just want you to have fun and enjoy it. Enjoy the Kong. Embrace the Kong.
I did really like, I finished the first world, and I encountered the first, they call them like dash K levels, which is basically the way those stages work is that they remove checkpoints from the game. And it's the first time the game made me actually sweat in a way that like I actually mumbled to myself when I made it 3/4 through one of the levels and it got really hairy. Did like the very cheesy like, oh, you fucking for real? All right, let's do this game. Like I said that out loud earlier today in a way that like the platforming is like really, really touchy and you can die quickly and it gets, I wouldn't call it Super Meat Boy, but it definitely, as someone that plays a lot of these games and wouldn't necessarily consider this game to be like super difficult, but I'm saying that from like an elitist platformer position, like I'm staking out like where I am on that scale. Like those K levels are really satisfying because they're a little bit more of what I'm looking for, which is the game just like kicking me in the balls and saying like, nah, you're actually not good enough. And like, I'm like, okay, right. Fine.
Yeah. Get to that last world. You'll have a good time.
It sounds like a threat almost. God.
No, it's a threat of happiness.
Okay. Yeah, that adds up. Okay. Is anyone playing something that doesn't involve any sort of lore at all? No lore, just no nothing.
Yeah, so I've been playing a ton of BattleTech, which is, a sui generis tactics game with no connections to anything outside the text of the game itself. And you definitely don't need to know anything about the BattleTech universe to enjoy it.
No, not at all.
So, yeah.
We've both been continuing to play that game, both for streams. We just did one this morning, actually, this Monday morning. But on off camera also, I think I'm probably in my 50th hour of my – no, I'm in my 40th hour or something of my main playthrough. And then you started the new playthrough, right?
Yeah. And I eventually just completely bailed on my old playthrough because the new playthrough was going so damn well. And also, I need to tell – like – I need to tell you about my setup, y'all.
Yeah?
I have been, I have never felt more like a king than when I am playing Battletech, streaming it from my gaming rig to my laptop, while watching basically every single hockey playoff game and most of the NBA playoffs as well on DVR. So skipping commercials. I am just feasting on good, entertaining stuff.
Rob content.
Yeah. And it's it is amazing. I was playing through some really tense, nail biters of battles, in Battletech, while at the same time, for instance, the Sixers are imploding in the most horrific and painful fashion possible against the Celtics, for instance. So it's been real good, and it's completely changed. I don't have to choose between sports and PC games anymore. They can live together. I can have my tactics games while watching tactics games.
That is honestly living the dream in a way that I cannot imagine. So is there, have you made mistakes because you've been so distracted by stuff going on in sports? Have you ever walked a light?
I mean, I got too invested in the Pelicans, for sure.
Okay, well, that's a mistake right there, isn't it? And then the Sixers and then the Raptors too.
I'm sorry, but, and also the Sixers fans are so expressive. Like there's something like that entire crowd. Somehow that seems to be the most heart on sleeve arena in the NBA. And it's
Philly, it's been a nightmare team for the better part of 10 years.
Philly got the Eagles last year, right? And so now it feels like anything is possible, right? If Nick Foles could do it, anybody can.
Oh, big dick Nick.
That's what I'm saying.
You know.
If only big dick Nick also played for the 76ers.
He'd probably do okay out there.
The 76ers. I do not think he would.
The 76ers, exactly.
No, okay.
No, I'm going to eject. Speaking of Battletech, I'm going to eject. Battletech has been such a... I'm doing my best not to talk too much about Battletech, not just in this moment, but in general right now, because I really, really like that game. A thing that I didn't say across our conversation about it, Rob, across bringing it up on the kind of regular podcast episodes, and I haven't even said it on Twitter yet, is just... It is a game that I want to be playing, and that is a thing that is that can be really hard to achieve sometimes, in that it's rare that a game is this is all I want to do. All I want to do is play this game. Normally I get to play, I have that for oh yeah, I want to play the game for a couple of hours. I'm playing Stardew right now in multiplayer, and I can talk about that a little bit in a second because I think it's interesting. But I'm enjoying it, and I'm okay, let's put aside a couple hours tonight to play some Stardew co-op, and that's nice. But when I start playing Battletech, I just want the rest of my night to just disappear and for it to only be Battletech and just focus in on it. And I want to, I'm getting close to the end of that game. I have three or four more story missions to go, but I just don't want to do them. I just want to do side stuff. I just want to keep playing the game. I want to tinker in the mech lab. I want to read more lore update things. I want to see what happens if I start trying to play the different factions to gain better reputation with them. I want to dig into all of these little side systems, and that is genuinely a pretty rare thing for me. It happens once, maybe twice a year. You can kind of count whatever my number one game is in a year to be that, but even sometimes not really. There have definitely been years where my number one game has not been something that has the sort of all I want to do is play this game effect on me, because there's so many cool things out there that it's easy for me to just be not cynical about it, but to wind up being pretty detached. But Battletech is all I want to do is run another mission. Even when it's 4 a.m., it's all I want to do. And I haven't been doing that, actually. I've been being an adult about it. But I go to bed every night wishing I had more time to play more Battletech.
Do you have a stuffed mech that you can cuddle?
I don't have any stuffed
mech. I would love a plush
mech. It's weird. I'm like, that would be really, a plush mech would be nice. Yeah. I don't have any mech shit in this room at all now that I'm looking around.
I think
over there in a different room, but not here.
It would have been good for that franchise if they'd figured out sort of a cute take on it for because I think it would, everything is so industrial looking in Battletech, but I'm at a stage in my life where man, if there were an adorable caricature of yeah, a Timberwolf.
It's a Timberwolf, or right? It has to be a Timberwolf,
yeah, or Catapult, yeah. Like, I would be super into that. But, yeah, this game just came out. I am 60 hours into it, which is, like, kind of not how I play games anymore.
Plus
not
the,
how...
like, 7 or 8 hours of us playing together on my account.
Right. And, like, so I am so into this. And even the, like, semi-random missions that I'm getting through the contracts, I'm having really memorable, dramatic battles in that stuff, too. It's not just the story missions. It's, like, you never know when you're going to have that special Battletech session that's going to, like, leave you, like, you know, pumping your fist, you know, in your chair because, like, you got away with one there.
Yep.
Okay, one last thing.
Saying, go ahead. I have more to say, so you go ahead.
Okay. Also, like, I also don't do this very often, but, like, I generally, and maybe it's just the Austin Walker, Waypoint, OC, Greater Fiction
Hell
thing
yeah.
sort of rubbing off on me.
Yes.
But, so I finally got hold of a trebuchet. For whatever reason, I'd never gotten that drop. Like, everyone else has.
For people who don't know, trebuchets are, like, built to be kind of really long-range missile mechs, right?
Yeah. They're reasonably maneuverable, very light armor, and they just, like, shellack their targets with, like, long-range missiles. And it just is, like, just torrents of chip damage, but also they do stability damage, which causes mechs to fall over, yada, yada, yada. So I finally got one of those. And I immediately upgraded the LRM-15s. I took off some of the other armaments because I'm like, you're not going to be anything but a long-range missile, bro.
Right, just
like, that's
down.
Stupid. Yeah. And then the character I put in it, because I had a lot of severe injuries after I did Smithin.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace, Decker. Again.
Yep.
But, so, I made a lot of new hires, and one of my characters is, like, this ex-Capellan serf, who, you know, escaped the Confederation, and basically, like, became, like, an IT worker for another, like in their background, like basically they did like really low level, like Comstar type work, but they weren't like Comstar initiates. They were just like the people
contractors,
who,
basically.
Yeah. Basically they're people who hooked up your cable in space and shit like that. Like that's what they did. But anyway, so they're they became the trebuchet driver, and I am finding myself like uncovering a character and a persona with this with this character, Hot Dog.
Great name.
Because,
first of all, a great name.
Yeah.
That's the name that an IT operator, no offense to anyone who's an IT, but someone who's like, I'm a space operator, I'm like an IT person for the internet of space, but like is thrust into becoming a fucking hotshot mech pilot, and like, are you gonna have a call sign? What's your call sign? Hot Dog. My name's Hot, you can call me Hot Dog.
Liked Battlestar Galactica a lot. But got weirdly attached to some characters. Anyway, so their approach, though, the combination of the name, the backstory, the really affectless delivery of the lines, basically paints this like workman-like picture of who this pilot is. And so all they do is they get behind the biggest rock they can in every mission. And punch in targeting data from their lancemates and just, like, blast the ever-living shit out of enemy mechs, like, twice their weight, just, like, turn after turn, just, like, firestorms of these LRMs that cause critical damage, have a high chance of critical damage. So, like, once armor has been chipped open, it's, like, time to feast. These missiles just start, like, ripping out components right and left. It's amazing.
Right.
And so the picture that's, like, formed in my head is, like, Hot Dog is this really cold-blooded, like, class revolutionary warrior of, like, yes, the mech is, like, this entrenched, like, symbol of aristocracy and, like, militarism. And Hot Dog don't give a shit about any of it. Hot Dog just, like, goes, plants that fucking mech behind a boulder and just starts punching in numbers, and people start dying, and they die in droves.
I love the notion of punching in numbers, too. Like, there was something really great about the internet. Like, you could imagine them being up in a Comstar satellite, plugged, like, be doing the job of, like, a 1910s early, like, phone operator, if it's, like, plugging things in, except now it's, like, plugging thing, you know, pushing the buttons to kind of dial in these indirect artillery strikes. Perfect. Good. Love it.
Yeah. And so that's like, the only way Hot Dog can play now. Like, right. Hot Dog's not going to be in any
You're
other sort of mech.
You're never going to put Hot Dog in a mech that is like a close-up brawler or something.
No, because right. Hot Dog isn't in this. Hot Dog doesn't believe in any of this, like, mech warrior mystique bullshit.
Right.
Like, Hot Dog has sort of the cold-blooded, like, mercilessness of, like, an English longbowman.
Right.
It like Agincourt. What I mean? Something right. like that. Just like, I don't give a shit.
There's
I do not
no
care
honor
who
here.
You
I'm
are.
Trying to fucking kill you and collect a paycheck and yep. like and dethrone this shitty noble.
Yeah.
Love it. That's very good. My little like added bits about Battletech actually don't have as much flair or flavor, unfortunately. Not because I haven't had great characters like that. Because I have. But like the two things I want to hit. One is just like, if you haven't heard, if you're curious, if this conversation makes you curious about Battletech, one, we've done a lot of streaming. A lot of that's up at YouTube. A lot of it's up on our Twitch. And then if you haven't listened to the Rob and I podcast, the review podcast for that game, you should, because it is us at our most nerdy bullshit. Like, Rob does the read of the review, and then we talk for like an hour and compare notes and exchange stories about different battles and why the game is good. But the other two things. One, I wanted to say really clearly for people who like haven't played it, or who like feel intimidated, as I've seen more people play the game and find their footing with it, as I've seen it find greater success, it's given me a lot of hope that people who like XCOM could play this game with just a few tips. We've had some great people write in and say like watching us play has helped their play a little bit. Not that we're great at it, but like we intuitively know some rules because we've been in that universe for a long time. And I think there are like a handful of like big picture things around like how, you know, it's not about putting your character in cover the way it is in XCOM and how, you know, you're kind of trying to like make sure you put a lot of damage on one target when they pop up. Stuff like that is stuff that like, I've seen people say, I didn't think this game was for me. And then I watched some streams, either ours or other people's, and like found the language in a sense to kind of play along, and really enjoy it. So that's been great. But the second thing I wanted to talk about was today's stream really briefly, which was just, and I think it's just an illustration of why I keep coming back to this game. We did an early mission. There's an early mission where you fight like a space pirate who has like your first heavy mech that you're going up against. Mechs in Battletech are broken up into classes, light, medium, heavy, and assault class, very heavy, like super heavy mechs. And those are all, if you played Mech Assault, or if you played Mech Warrior, it's like that same division between little tiny guys that run around and don't have a lot of guns or missiles, but can like spot for the other big ones and lock on for you and kind of be your scout, or kind of harass and make other enemies a little easier to hit. Two big ones that are just like walking Goliaths that will just tear everything apart in front of you. And we were playing the mission on stream today where you go up against your first real heavy mech. And Rob has played that mission twice before. I've played it once before. And it's played out in a way that was so unique compared to how we normally play it out. And there is a degree of expressivity in the movement, in the ways in which the you know, there's lots of hexes, there's lots of spots on the lots of like nodes on the map where you can stand in comparison to something like XCOM. And I love XCOM too. We're gonna play more of that tomorrow. But like there are certain fights in XCOM 2 that play out where there's an ideal play. There's ideally a like, here is the way I want to play it. And obviously some Battletech fights also have that sort of like, okay, what we should do is set up blah, blah, blah. But because there's such a differentiation between your individual mechs and their mech warrior pilots, because they're so unique, what you roll into battle with can really change things. But even in this fight where we had probably the same loadout that we've always had in this fight across our three other encounters with it, it played out differently where this giant mech kept trying to get behind one of our smaller ones and hit it in the back. And we had this like really funny kind of leapfrogging that
in reverse.
Yeah, totally. was like backwards leapfrogging until finally we took this thing down. And it's just like it. I said in our kind of big review pod about it that, you know, the thing I love about Into the Breach, a game that I think all of us here have now put some time into, is how predictable it is and how like you end up choreographing a really fun and elegant solution to various problems. Battletech goes so far in the opposite direction and says like there's actually lots of joy in randomness because the randomness is so much higher than like something, not in terms of damage, but in terms of like, there's lots of variables that can fire. It's not just do you shoot the guy. It's like where do you shoot the mech? Do you knock off one of its legs? Do you do a critical hit on like a place where there's some ammo? And you can like you can fudge the odds based on your choices, but at some point you're going to roll the dice. And there have been so many times when you get a surprising outcome where the little mech gets the surprise crit on like the little storage component filled with missiles, and the missiles blow up and take out the cockpit, where you're like, you just get excited in that way that I used to get excited for XCOM, Unknown, when that first came out, when your character like raises their gun, are they going to hit or not? And I haven't really had that since then because I'm become so used to it. But seeing now again how like you just get that little tingle at the back of your neck, you're like, ooh, how's this going to go? Let's see. I love that so much, and it's such a nice supplement to Into the Breach, which doesn't give you that how is this going to go so much as it gives you a like how the fuck can I figure this out. You know,
this is what's so funny to me, because I've got a lot of friends and people I would not normally expect to be like, I really thought I'd be alone on this one, right? Like I was mm-hmm. I really thought BattleTech would be a thing that like, you know, only 80s and 90s kids like uh-huh. this old ass tactics game, and everyone else is gonna be like, what the fuck? But it's really like landing for a lot of people I was not expecting. But I think one thing that's really pleasing to me is that it is reminding me like the direction in tactics games has been to get to decisive outcomes faster and faster and faster. So like right. in XCOM, if you get a flanking move on somebody, it's not a small modifier. It is a massive modifier. Like that's going to swing the possibilities completely in your favor for how hard you're going to hit somebody and the likelihood you're going to make contact. You know, Into the Breach is like almost the logical conclusion of this, where everything is like predetermined, provided you can just like make the right moves. The generation that BattleTech has descended from, and a lot of like tabletop war game design and traditional war game design,
even RPGs of the era are the same way. If you look at like Cyberpunk 2020, it's going yeah. where you're about to say.
Yeah, it's all about the like this outcomes through like accretion of variables and yeah. randomness, but it all happens very slowly. So like, you know, when you look at like, you know, those pictures of wargamers in the 70s, like those massive like, you know, tabletop setups of like the invasion of France or whatever, and they're calculating all these like, you know, variables together, like what are the weather conditions today, how many units are firing on this hex, and how many are, what's the return fire going to look like, and they do that all again, and it makes a tiny little difference, and then you have to do it all again the next turn. The numbers have changed a little bit, and the dynamics have changed a little bit. And it's all very, like, justly so. That was, like, found to be really ponderous, and people have gotten away for it. They want, like, games have generally been moving in a snappier direction. BattleTech is reminding me what is cool about those, like, more accretional tactics games, where, like, no, it's not all just finding one good position in one turn and just letting, you know, the odds work in your favor and just, like, cleaning house the way it is in XCOM. This is a, you have to, like, get a little bit of an edge, and then it's like you just got your, you know, you got a crowbar and a door frame, and you're just working it back and forth trying to, like, pry victory loose. Totally. And that is really satisfying in a way that, like, and it's not an either-or thing. Like, XCOM, right. I still love Tactical Tuesdays with XCOM, but it is reminding me what is so cool about this kind of tactics game.
Totally. Well, like I came up playing tabletop RPGs of this line of descent, and like now I play a completely different kind because that other kind sucks. Like it's frustrating. I used to play Cyberpunk 2020, which is the game that Cyberpunk, the upcoming CD Projekt Red game, is based on, and the way that game's combat worked, especially if you're using the Friday night firefight rules, was this absurd thing, because there was this thing in tabletop game design at the time that was like, we want to simulate what a gunfight is like. We want to simulate combat, like the way it really happens. And no, like, no, I don't want to roll seven times to see if I hit someone in the hand or the elbow. Like, I don't want to do that. But what BattleTech kind of does is say, like, okay, well, we'll handle all of the rolls. It's not that. It's like, we'll just, you hit fire and we'll roll. And the thing that you get on the other side, it isn't that it's realistic. It's that it's surprising. And having all those variables lets it be surprising in a way that XCOM 2 just hasn't been. And again, I love XCOM 2, but like that's just not a, it's not what it's going for. It's going for something a lot simpler. Or Into the Breach, it plays like chess. It plays like a board game where you can look at it and be like, okay, here are the outcomes. And so seeing BattleTech kind of rehabilitate this style of tabletop game and war game design is really interesting to me. It makes me very curious about what comes next in a weird way. So we'll see. We'll see. All right. We should probably take a quick break and then come back, with some more games talk and maybe some questions. Be right back.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, we are back, and I just really briefly want to talk about Stardew Valley's co-op. Has anyone here dug into that at all yet? I know, Rob, you were a big Stardew fan.
Yeah, but I haven't done the co-op. Like, because for me, like, weirdly, it's not a thing I want from the game because, like, my partner and I each had our own lives in Stardew, and comparing notes on that was great. But I'm not sure we want to go to Stardew together.
Right. That's. Okay, I'll let you deal with your life.
You had your separate Stardews.
I was gonna say something, but it's up to you and yours to work out what your situation is. You know what I'm saying?
What you were about to say, like, well, like any real healthy couple would obviously want to go to Stardew together.
Of course, obviously. Yeah. No, I totally get it. In fact, I kind of get it because it's giving me a weird, not a weird vibe, but like, so... Rob, you wrote about your unhealthy obsession with Stardew a few months ago, right? Yeah. And I could feel that happening to me, or more importantly, my obsession with it or my anxiety around it was instead of becoming an obsession, it became kind of a halting mechanism. I couldn't play because I felt like I was failing to maximize. I get that from a lot of games like this, and I really love it when a game takes some degree of control away from me. It's why I can fuck with Dwarf Fortress or, you know, games like Rimworld, because there's a limit to what I can control to some degree, you know? I have to leave it up to the in-game characters to do a lot of the management, or not the management, the actual execution. Whereas here, with Stardew, I was always beating myself up for not spending my time the most efficient way I could. And so... I was really hoping, and I think it does to some degree, playing it with someone else has completely actually alleviated that anxiety. It's made it be a game that I can play because I'm not afraid of underperforming, partially because I'm not playing on my own farm. I'm playing on my friend's farm, and that makes it a lot easier to just be like, yeah, I'm just helping out, you know? Like, I'm just going to go kill some monsters in the mines. I'm going to do some fishing. You know what? I'll spend all my energy doing all of the watering today, and I'll just hang out in town and talk to some people. And it's such
Shit,
a relief.
That does sound really good.
It's such a relief. Rob, you can set like a money modifier so that, you know, if there's two people, you could make it so crops sell for half as much so that you have to work just as hard as you did originally. Or like me, you could just leave it at regular and just like not have too much to worry about when it comes to money. Or you still have something to worry about because like the backpack still costs the same for both of you. You both still have to upgrade your tools, right? But it does also allow for a bit of a specialization, right? It's like, oh, you know what? I'll work on my sword so that I can be the person who primarily, like the sword and the fishing rod. So I can pretty much be the person who fishes and the person who goes into the mines and clears stuff out. You work on the axe so that you can get us a bunch of wood and like can start crafting and blah, blah, blah. And that stuff has been really cool. What I will say is I'm also feeling a little more detached than I'd like to from the farm at this point. Partially because it feels like there's not much to do except roll the clock at this point. My hope is that when I get into the next season, it'll start like clicking in better. But it doesn't feel like our farm in that way. In the way that like playing Minecraft with someone can make, I can feel like, oh, this is our house. This is our, you know, elaborate convent we've built in the woods or whatever bullshit we've decided to get up to. For whatever reason right now, it's just kind of like, I don't know, throw some seeds down, put some water out there and escape into the beautiful world of Stardew, which isn't a problem because that game has a lot going on. But it's a trade-off I'm happy to make, but I kind of had hoped it wouldn't be a trade-off. I was kind of hoping that I would both get the excitement around having my farm and also the reduction of anxiety around having to do everything perfectly, you know?
But instead you just don't, you're just not as invested in the farm, period.
Yeah, and maybe yeah. I'll get there. On the other hand, the other thing that's nice is I don't have to give a fuck about some NPCs because I'm not trying to be friends with everybody. Like, yeah, my friend can be friends with you. I don't need to deal with you, Pam, or whoever, you know? Pam, it's your birthday. Happy birthday. Here is a rock I found. I'm not spending 400 gold on a beer for you. Also, hey, right. Can we fucking check how expensive beer is in this town? Because 400 gold is too expensive for beer.
Also,
is there gold in the beer? Is that, like, what's going on
here? Yeah, it's Goldschlager, actually.
I see. Okay.
Rob, are you going to yell at me about?
No, I was just going to... Look, I just really resent, and, like, I know, look, Pam's been dealt a tough hand. I get it.
I feel for
but
Pam.
But at the same time, Penny is doing an awful lot of emotional labor, and, like, she is, like, carrying that family on her fucking shoulders.
Uh-huh.
And, like, what are you doing, Pam? Like, how are you helping your daughter on this one?
What Pam is doing. Pam is asking for a beer for her birthday and then guilting me when I give her a rock instead. So that's what Pam is doing. It's a cool game. It's nice to be in that world, is what I'll say. It is like a really relaxing game, and so far the like tech side of it has worked really, really, really well. So there's that. You know, it's like I haven't had any problems trying to connect or anything like that. You know,
So I guess one thing I'm curious about though is like. The thing that really makes Stardew work is that. In the middle of this, like, idyllic pastoral life,
yeah,
you're also learning things about your neighbors and you're becoming a part of that community. And I'm wondering if shifting the focus of the co-op activity, does it leave less room for things like the little discoveries you make about the people you share this town with?
So far, my main playthrough of Stardew, I was further in, so I haven't learned anything new that I hadn't known before. But what I'll say is just, like, the fact that I don't need to care about everyone's birthday makes me actually a little more invested in specific characters, where I'm like, I'm just not trying to play the field, so to speak. Like, I'm going to zero in on the handful of characters I actually give a fuck about and work through them and not try to maximize. And that actually does help me a lot in terms of caring about the town more than just caring about numbers going up. So, you know, so far so good. There are characters who I didn't know were there, or like new characters maybe, or something. Like, I don't know. I keep running into people who I'm like, I don't remember Emily at all. Was Emily there from launch?
Well, Emily was away. So, you know.
Okay. I gotcha. Like the game. Yeah. On that note, we should go to questions. Unless, Rob, you have more to say about Stardew.
No.
I'm curious. I would love you to, here's an assignment, play some Stardew multiplayer. Tell me how it goes.
I come back in 2 weeks. Well, my partner and I have split up.
No. I think I was going the other way, which is like, well, my partner and I are opening a real farm by Waypoint. Gotta go. All right, if there's nothing else, anybody else playing anything this week, or can we dip into the old question bucket?
I think we could dip.
Well, let's do a dip. If you have questions, you can send them in to gaming@vice.com. This one is a very important one. This is probably the most important question we've ever had. And this one comes in from Ryan, who says, "Hey, y'all, we got a quick question for you. Eggs or beer? Thanks."
Wait.
Eggs.
Eggs or beer?
Eggs.
Okay, can we unpack this a little bit?
Yes, please.
Like, what, just like in the moment? Like,
I think
someone walks up to you and says, "Eggs or beer?"
No,
or is
forever.
It? Am I choosing one or the
I
other?
I think it's you're choosing
one. Is this like snap and then one is gone?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
and I want to be. Let's keep it. I don't want no alibis. Like, I don't want any way for you to be like, well, eggs are really important in the ecosystem. Like, no, like that.
This
gap
is,
oh,
this
gets
is presuming all of everything works out fine in terms of ecology.
Yes, the world does not fall apart. Right, exactly. But we don't. All birds just stop. It's just for you. Yeah, in fact, that's true. It's just for you. Good call. Good fix.
Like, you could develop an allergy to one or the other.
That's a good way of framing it. Yeah, like a deathly allergy.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, that's no, maybe that's too, that gives, because then I'm going to say beer. I'm going to say I'd rather have eggs because there's eggs are just in too many things.
Well,
and if it's a deathly allergy, I'm going to fuck up and eat some shit that has eggs in it.
I'm sorry. There is just no contest here because the problem is beer is great. You can't make, like, beer by itself cannot be turned into, like, delicious ice creams or delicious baking recipes.
Yeah, that's why there's no contest.
I want to be clear, eggs by themselves cannot be turned into delicious ice cream either.
But it's a key ingredient.
But yeah,
I just want to be clear.
Yeah, but it is a building block for so many like delicious things in this world.
Delicious
beer is just
omelets.
Beer, and I got hard liquor. I'm going to be just fine.
That's the thing.
Yeah, see, that was where I fell, Rob, was that, yes, I love eggs, but I could also just live on whiskey for the rest of my life and, like, wouldn't blink.
Kirkland
so you're saying
whiskey, no
replace
less.
Replace eggs with whiskey is what you're saying.
Whiskey omelets. I mean, yeah.
Mix in a little buffalo and then we're talking.
Now we're fucking talking. Yeah, I definitely am with you.
I actually think this question wasn't hard enough. I think actually this one's easy.
So wait, what would you change to make this a harder question? Eggs or rice?
Eggs or milk?
Eggs or milk? Whoa.
That one's hard.
Yeah, I think it has to be something like because
it has to be of kind.
Yeah, it has to be of kind. Yeah. Like beer is like an extracurricular activity for me. Like eggs is like a primary ingredient in like a huge amount of the meals that I have in the morning.
It needs to literally be apples or oranges.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Which is I've always
like had if you asked me to choose like scotch or bourbon, then like I'm having a larger existential crisis of like which brown liquor I'm landing on, or if it's like pancakes or eggs.
Ooh,
that's
how about
not
this?
Hard, because that's still eggs.
How about this? Clear drinks or colored drinks?
Oh, God.
That fucks you up, because
water
is clear is a big one.
I was going to ask, you're going to carve out an exception for water.
No.
Wait, what does that matter? Does that, so
I mean
that also
drinks. I mean...
So, but no, I'm saying is... Because you're saying clear drinks, so water can be involved in the colored drink.
Yes, yes, water could be inside of a color, yes. So, like, whiskey, if that has water in it, that's okay. But the final product, the thing that you put to your lips, either has color in it, and also you can't just food color water. Like, food coloring isn't enough.
I drink a lot of water.
Or wait, maybe it is, but that means you have to live the rest of your life carrying around food coloring to put in your water to drink.
So here's like the other part of this, though. Do you mean, like, in terms of light can go through it? Like, clear as in, like Gatorade
clear? No, Gatorade has color.
Okay.
I'm not saying transparent versus... Milk has color.
Right.
I'm talking about vodka. I'm talking about...
Water.
I'm talking about clear rum. I'm talking about Sprite.
Tequila.
There are some things in the middle. Ginger ale, I think, probably I want to say, is colored.
It's colored.
Right?
Yeah, no, it's gold.
But like 7-Up, Sprite, that's clear.
7-Up, Sprite.
Pepsi Crystal.
Those are still clear.
Yeah, Pepsi Crystal, exactly.
Oh, of course.
No coffee?
Wait, coffee has color.
Yeah, that's
what I'm saying. Like,
no, this is not a contest.
Get rid of the clear ones. Like, I was waffling, and then Danielle pointed out coffee, and then I realized
coffee is good. Coffee's very good.
No, it's not even a contest. Like, I would put just enough juice into water that it would like take on a color, and I'd be like, great, now I'm good.
So now I'm saying, now I think that this wasn't hard enough.
No, you can't.
We found a loophole.
No. You can't mix. You can't water down anything.
Wait,
you can't take
water
juice. You can't. As a
you ever made
fan,
a cocktail,
unless,
Austin? Like, what do you think is happening there?
You cannot. You can. The only way you can do it is by adding ice, and you can't like game it. You can only add in the amount of ice you would add today into that drink.
Wait. Okay. So hold on.
You can't over ice something. You can't add. Yeah. No. That's
okay,
the challenge.
Okay. So let me. Okay. So. For instance, I've got a SodaStream at home.
Yeah.
A delicious thing to do is you take your soda water and you pour like a little limeade into it, okay? And you get a delicious, like still like 90% water, but a little bit of limeade just like makes it just extra delicious and it's a special treat. Also imparts color.
I think that
you're
that's
saying that's banned.
I think that's water. That's banned. That's water. The thing you're describing is water.
You this is really hard. Yeah. I only, like, 99% of the days in my life, I drink water and I drink coffee and I drink nothing else in
yeah,
my
totally.
Life.
Yeah, totally. Same.
How do you choose between those?
Because that's what I have on my desk right now is I have a giant 64-ounce yep. or 32-ounce water bottle.
Yep.
And I have an X-Files mug full of brown coffee.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm being called out here. I feel like this question sees through
all right.
me.
Here we go. You know what we need? Here's what we need. I'm going to find clear coffee is what we need.
Does that exist?
No, it doesn't.
Clear coffee, the first colorless coffee in the world.
Oh, no.
It exists. I don't know
what's it actually made of.
I wouldn't trust
yeah.
that.
What's it? Clear?
No.
It's creators.
It's going to have that stuff that causes loose stools in it, I'm sure.
Probably.
You're right. This is the thing.
Yeah. Its creators are remaining. This is from BGR.com. And they say, the clear coffee, which is sold under the somewhat confusing brand name of CLR space CFF, is completely colorless liquid sold in a clear bottle. The result is a drink that looks like water, but is actually a caffeinated beverage made with Arabica coffee beans. As the company describes it, there are no preservatives, stabilizers, sugars, or sweeteners, and it carries just a few calories per serving, just like regular coffee. But because it's clear, it won't stain your teeth. Its creators are remaining particularly tight-lipped about exactly how they managed to achieve mm-hmm. a completely clear coffee beverage.
Hey, I want to list one of the questions from the FAQ on the website of this clear coffee company. What do people say about it? Answer. The most used word by our customers is unusual, which we completely agree with.
Ooh. They say here, quote, using methods that have never been used before and adding due to this combination of technology and high quality ingredients, a drink has been developed which is unique in taste and flavor.
Also, on this fact, which you can then share each of the answers to your preferred social media, includes Facebook,
good.
Twitter, and Google Plus. So I don't trust this motherfucker. I don't trust him.
I don't know. This.
What are you doing with Google Plus on there?
Article on Influencer.com seems to make a pretty compelling case. The brothers were sick of the teeth stains that are associated with coffee. Yeah, I don't know. Brush, man. Like.
That's it. Oh, man, and also this clear coffee page has, like, the most – why did we create clear coffee? Because of the hectic lifestyle, we want to have a refreshing, ready-to-drink coffee, which doesn't stain our teeth. Like, you're saying you work too much to brush your teeth. That's what you're saying. Brush your damn teeth.
Yo, so I'm looking at a picture on a different website where that coffee does not look clear.
No, it's not clear. I want to –
it does not look remotely
– it looks like – it looks like watered down pee is what it looks like.
Yeah. Like, like in the pictures on their fucking Instagram, yeah, it looks like cut like a glass of vodka. But in pictures that I'm seeing in the wild, it looks little bit more like we fished this out of a pond.
Yeah. Oh,
you know what what has to happen now, right?
Oh, are we going to get
raw
this
water
clear
coffee?
Oh!
Something to keep in consideration for how much, like, you know, I probably have 2.5 cups of coffee a day. That's probably roughly where I end up. A 4-pack of this costs $30.
Oh my god.
It has 6 customer reviews at 1.5 stars. Let's look.
I'm looking. I gotta read these.
1 star. If you like coffee, then try something else. A swallow of this will make you hate your tongue.
Oh my god.
Brad Perry writes, made me sick, sent to lab for testing.
Oh, Brad.
1 star.
Oh. It will cause loose stools. I knew it.
What?
It's like Olestra. Remember the like fat substitute from the 1990s that potato chips had?
Yeah.
It was like 1-calorie potato chips or whatever, low-fat potato chips, but they may cause loose stools, and they had to put that on the label of like the chip bag. This is real.
God.
Erica Guarva writes, this product is a great conversation starter, but has nothing on taste. A cross between... Watered down whiskey and coffee ground. Also, is not actually clear, more the color of rainwater. So I actually think this is off the list.
Yeah, it's off the list. We couldn't drink clear coffee, unfortunately.
It's out.
Oh, I would miss coffee so much. Yeah, I would miss it so much.
I couldn't do it. I'd have to find a water substitute, I think.
Yeah, but what is your water substitute?
I don't know. Iced tea. I drink a lot of water.
No, it can't be iced tea.
You can't I can't drink 32 ounces of iced tea.
Water substitute.
What do you do when you exercise?
Yeah.
Wait, okay, so hold on. Hear me out.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What about an IV drip? Is that inbound?
I just thought of that.
But that's hard to, like, if you're out on a run. Okay, like think of this. Well, it's hot, Danielle, it's summer, I didn't have to worry about that.
Look, it is every person for themselves. We're less concerned about Danielle right now. We're more concerned about Rob.
Oh, my God.
An IV bag is perfect for my lifestyle.
All right, here we go. I'm looking up substitutes for water. Chicken broth. Low-sodium chicken broth.
That's not a substitute.
God.
Oh. All right, keep going.
Eating a watermelon.
That okay. One, all right.
Okay.
You know, I mean, all right. Watermelon water, and it's delicious, and I drink it in the summer after training really, really hard. It's actually delicious. They just ground up a watermelon, and you just drink it, and it is amazing.
I could do that, and it would have that pink color.
Problem.
Right?
I guess it does. Maybe I'm saying this is a product you can buy, and I do, because it's amazing.
You would just get really heavily into, like, light juices, probably. Right?
It's a lot of sugar, though.
No, Austin's not letting me have my form of light juice.
That's because you make it. You can't make it. Or it has to be at least, it has to be like a thing where it can't be 90-10. So, it can't be basically water.
So I can't have my delicious treat, but somebody else can have like basically Crystal Light, and that's inbounds. That's okay in your eyes.
I don't know if Crystal Light confuses it. Maybe we have a rationing system where you're allowed like a water mixture. In fact, yeah, where you're allowed like a watered down.
Oh, yeah, this isn't
like
going to feed into negative stereotypes about leftists at all. So what we need, perhaps if we had some sort of bureaucracy tracking.
Yeah, if we had some sort of, can I get some sort of committee together, some in charge of this? That would be really ideal, honestly. Some sort of oversight committee, maybe, I don't know. I can't find the word for what I'm looking for.
Like a water board? Or like
okay, well that's, wow.
I think we should punt on this question. Yeah. We should carry this over to Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. I think people need to write in. I think Please. We need to weigh our options. Consider this. Get back to us with some feedback. And I think we'll bring it to a close on Friday's podcast.
Okay.
Is that Kiryu and Sionji? Right. Sorry,
oh my
what?
God. It's fine. We're gonna dip over to some other questions. This one comes in from Ben in Tasmania, who says, I recently noticed how much of my day-to-day language, mannerisms, and even thought patterns are influenced by the Waypoint crew. Sorry. I'm sorry for your loss. Some of these language inserts have become pretty common, like using y'all when talking to my D&D group or exclaiming hell yeah whenever Denzel Washington nonchalantly does something rad in The Equalizer.
Hell yeah. So,
good. Some are less common but arguably more impactful, like when I reference where the pee is stored or how someone or how something amazingly also has feet. I'm sure all this Waypoint speak will be my undoing when I start talking about my rough and sweetie's feeties, but until then, I'd like to know what or who has influenced all of y'all's language patterns the most. Kind regards, Ben in Tasmania. Does anyone have any, like, you pick something up from a specific friend or, like, a specific workplace?
I just have a habit of doing that in general, where, like, over the course of my life, it's been, like, pointed out to me at, like, multiple occasions that I will just pick up certain like words and mannerisms from people I'm spending a lot of time with, like not consciously doing that. Like just it's just a thing that has happened at various points, and then I'll look back and be like, why was I using that word? Like like I was just around that person a lot. Like that's been something that I can trace back to like being a teenager. There was this kid that was in our group a lot, and he had just like a very specific way of speaking, and I was hanging out with him like multiple times a week, you know, every week, and all of a sudden, I was picking up on his words, and that's just been, like, a weird character trait of mine. And, like, the weird other flip side of that is that when I try to eliminate a word that I'm from my vocabulary, I end up often using it more often as I try to escape it.
Yeah, that's a real thing.
How about you and Rob, Danielle? Anything from you?
I mean, for me, the big one is like a bigger picture thing, which is like learning to drop my natural accent over time. Like I was like made fun of for how strong my accent was in college. And so I sort of like got embarrassed and sort of tried to drop it and over enunciate my R's, which is, man, it's challenging when you talk like this for the first 18 years of your life, let me tell you.
Right.
Yeah, like that was a thing. And then kind of embracing the fact that like having an accent is fine and not a bad thing. And don't listen to your shithead friends from college because they suck. Anyway, that's a main thing for sure. But I definitely noticed like if I, you know, I watched a lot of Star Trek growing up. So I definitely sort of, this is really dorky, but like picked up on certain terms that they use a lot in Star Trek and the sort of like
way
of speaking and modes of speaking that professional people speak like was definitely sort of like an early influence in my life, which is the nerdiest thing on earth, but true.
Do you have an example of one of the Star Trek phrases you've used?
It's more like the tone of speaking, like a very clipped, very precise language. You know, the way they kind of do techno babble is like a good example. But it's also, you know, oh, the tachyon emissions or whatever bullshit, you know, kind of thing. But they always spoke so professionally and enunciated everything so well. And it's more of a manner of speaking than specific words. Although I definitely like would say engage for a while. That's real. That's a real thing.
Great.
I'm sorry to everyone.
Rob, how about you?
So there's a couple things. Like Patrick, to an almost uncomfortable degree for me, I just sort of try to blend into whatever scenario I am in. And so this gets really prominent when I'm from Northwest Indiana. There is no strong regional accent to Northwest Indiana. You don't have the Chicago accent, but neither do you have like a sort of downstate Hoosier accent. Like you have a very neutral, like, you know, Plains accent. However, if, like, for instance, I was at a friend's wedding down in Kentucky, you know, a few years ago, like, over the course of, like, a day or two down there, I sound like a completely different person. Like, I have, and what's weird is I lapse into it very naturally because this accent was literally like 10 miles south down the road. Like literally like you crossed a certain highway and people started sounding like this. I can't do it on command, but give me like a day immersed in like the central like United States or, you know, like Appalachia region. I will very quickly start losing my Northwest Indiana accent. And start it's not quite a drawl, but it's just a lot of the mannerisms. It's a like slightly slower, more laid back, expressive way of talking. It's a bizarre thing, and it's uncomfortable because I do it without any conscious effort. I do not know I am doing it. And so that's the sort of thing that can get you in trouble because it's like people know what you fucking sound like. Mm-hmm. And so how long, how is this going to come across? Like a lot of times nobody notices. But I always like worry people are going to think you're putting on a fucking accent to like make fun of them or something. Like when people come into Boston and do like an exaggerated Boston accent and you kind of think like a person's going to get their asses kicked. That's kind of my fear. And so I try to watch out for that, but I am powerless not to do that. And so, like, I mean, that's why, like, I'm the sort of person who, in no time at all, is saying things like sweeties, feeties around the house and shit like that. Because, like, oh, this is, you know, that's just how I blend into the scenery at Waypoint. Like, I cannot be spotted
that's
against
your social, your social camouflage. Yeah. Yeah, great. Love it. I'm glad for you. I definitely have it in a bunch of different ways. Obviously I've talked about code switching before as being like a big part, and it's like a big part of it is very much like paying close attention to the ways I should talk to, again, yeah, put my head down, right, and not be the subject of any attention in certain places. But there's also just like the much more low-key and not kind of racially tinged versions of this, which is like working at Giant Bomb definitely meant I picked up a lot of Vinny and Jeff mannerisms in that year. A lot of my playing something straight is just Jeff's playing something straight. like being the straight man in a room, which is, it's hard for me to do, honestly. but also, I want to shout out my friend Allie, who is the producer on Friends at the Table and One Song Only, who for years has like, just has phrases that worm their way into my fucking brain. And like, I end up saying them and like, it comes across like it's an Austin thing, but like, no, it's my friend Allie on Twitter. He like, none of y'all know who Allie is, but that's definitely her who started that, whatever that thing. I didn't start it, but like who I got it from. I can't even name one of those things specifically, but there's definitely a number of things where I'll say it. And in my own mind, I'm saying it in my friend Allie's voice. But when people hear it, it's like, oh yeah, Austin came up with that. And it's like, no, it's hard to shout things out like that sometimes, you know? I don't think anything else, but those are the big ones I'd say.
Oh, fictional influences. Two things to my shame. There's a lot of Sorkinisms like rattling around my fucking brain.
So for me, it's not Sorkinisms. It's not phrases. Yeah, The Wire. The Wire, it's phrases. The Wire is definitely phrases and in-jokes. Same thing with like home movies. Tons of home movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like home movies is one of my favorite things. And so lots of like lots of little reference. Like the only show that I will reference by just saying quotes from it in conversation pretty much. But with Sorkin, the worst thing is that in college, I was such a huge Sports Night fan, that like I molded the cadence of my conversation with my friend Art around the Casey two leads, Casey and Dan. Yeah.
I wanted to be Dan Rydell. Like I just did.
See, I wanted to be Casey, and I think that was like everything wrong with college Austin.
Yeah, Casey was Olbermann, man.
I'm aware. Aww. Casey and Austin in college. Like, it was a long time ago now, and things have changed. But I absolutely cultivated that exact cadence of back and forth with my best friend Art. And you know, we were incredibly good friends, and he was like was the editor in chief of the college comedy magazine, the humor magazine for the campus, and was one of the funniest people I knew, was the funniest person I knew in college for sure. And that meant, you know what? I knew Pilot also, formerly Vice's own Pilot Veru, but Pilot's extremely funny. Anyway, Art and I very much just like fell into that rhythm, and like we had it for years and years, and you can still hear us if you listen to us on podcasts or something like that. Art and I still occasionally fall into that back and forth. I wish I hadn't gone out of my way to cultivate it, because it's a thing a monster would do, but it was still a really, like, it was fun to have that sort of rapport with somebody, you know? I'll say the weird thing about that is you can kind of turn your friendship into a performance when you are striving for that sort of back and forth. And thankfully it didn't go that, but you know, sometimes you want to be the two funny people in the room. You know, does that make sense? You want to be the two people who like everyone else in the room is laughing at. And that works really well when it's time for that. And other times it is not time for that. And y'all need to shut the fuck up past Austin and Art. that's definitely for me. One more. Does y'all have time for one more, maybe?
All right. One more dip.
This one comes in from Matt from Wisconsin, who says, I love open world games, especially at the beginning when you're opening up the world and you see this huge place to discover all the little hidden nooks and crannies in. That feeling of wonder and excitement about what is around the next corner, what's over that hill, etc., is unparalleled in gaming, in my opinion. From listening to you wax about Breath of the Wild, I know you feel that feeling too. My issue comes in when we're about halfway to three-fourths of the way through the game and have maxed out my skill tree already. I tend to be a completionist, and I want to get everything out of the game that they put into it, but that hurts me in the long run because I spend time exploring everything as I'm going and becoming overpowered and over-leveled to the point where a lot of times I'm not learning experience anymore. My skill tree is maxed out. Anyway, I'm wondering if any of you have found any open world games that have an extensive enough leveling system to provide worthwhile exploration towards the back half of the game. Thank you, and keep up the great podcasting. Thank you. Best regards, Matt from Wisconsin.
That's very tough because that's how that's pretty much how open worlds are designed for players that, you know, they have all the extra stuff so that if you are a completionist, you can see it. But all the critical path stuff tends to be fairly pared down in terms of, okay, all you need to do is this so that most people, you know, 80% of people, whatever percentage actually finish a game, I'm sure it's more like 20%. They'll actually finish it. So that may be a tough one to find. I think maybe it might be more worthwhile to find something that scratches your itch for like, oh, these are weird, interesting things. It's weird little nooks and crannies than necessarily, oh, this is all critical path stuff.
Or like, this is all worth leveling up, or like worth is going to give me experience I need or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I would say the dream of like the game that has a big enough skill tree to last you the length of play is not realistic for the reasons Danielle just said, or not realistic, but like is uncommon for the reason that Danielle just said. But it's why I'm so drawn to games where that is not emphasized. Like Breath of the Wild isn't a game where you get more skills as the game goes on, really, right? You get, you know, you learn more recipes, you get better equipment for sure, and you get your gear can give you certain abilities, and there's lots to work on in terms of upgrading all of your gear and blah blah blah. There is a lot to dig into there, but you know, you have all of your verbs basically by the time you leave the plateau.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting going from that to We were just playing something else, or I was just playing, God of War, actually, where God of War keeps giving you those tools to get through brambles, or to unlock, you know, the weird mirror doors or whatever. And it felt like, I just give me the stuff and let me do cool stuff with them. Like, I don't need that sort of Metroid style of like getting a new, or Zelda style, getting the new tool and going back to a place you've been, didn't really do it for me coming off of Breath of the Wild, which just kind of said, all right, we're going to give you these 6 or 7 tools. And then all through the game, you'll have them available and you will give you challenges around them. It's part of why I liked that game so much. The other thing there is just like, I think that there are ways for games to give you progression mechanics separate from yourself in a weird way. So like with Metal Gear Solid 5, a game that is way too long for its own good, I was still working on my base long after I had the equipment I needed to like successfully complete missions. And it was like cool to work on this side thing that was the base, even though I was done, or like in Skyrim or in Fallout, where it's like, okay, I'm working on my, you know, Fallout 4, my settlement in Skyrim, I have a house that I'm trying to like build some cool stuff through, or I have a mod where I'm trying to fill out a museum or something. And that those alternate things that I can work on that are separate, that are almost more like Animal Crossing things more than traditional like skill trees increasing, made late game stuff still kind of useful for me, or still like scratch the itch of capital P progress, you know?
Yeah.
Rob or Patrick, anything?
I was just like, I think my relationship with open world games for these reasons always tends to end like the last thing that like Faye says to Don Draper in like season 3 of Mad Men, where she's like, I hope she knows you only like the beginning of things. Like that is like the problem is those games are all built around that promise. Right. And then, like, so few of them can actually follow through on. Because, like, this is a world with a lot of content to fill. And eventually that wonder fades, and then you want the world to react and change and evolve in response to your actions. And that's really tough. I think for me, it is less about skill. Like, it's less about, like, mechanics changing and skills sort of continuing to unveil themselves throughout the game. That's useful to have things that change your style of play throughout a game. But for me, I want to feel like the world is evolving or changing as I'm playing. Like, this isn't exactly an open world game, but something that means a lot to me, like something that counts for a lot for me is, remember the first Arkham Asylum, where course of that game, Arkham Asylum is a pretty big game. It's a pretty big place, but you traverse the same spaces again and again and again, but it doesn't get old because each time the architecture has been changed and adapted to whoever is occupying it. And that's actually the stuff I've lived for in sort of open world games or nonlinear games, where it's like, this is a familiar setting that I've seen a million times before, and now it feels different or hostile or changed to me. The ending of Dishonored 2 is really powerful for that reason. Like, you come back to Dunwall, and like, this is the most you've seen of the city since the start of the game. Really, it's the most you've seen of it since the first Dishonored game in a lot of ways. And the ways it's changed, the ways it's become poisoned and corrupted, is really powerful to see the familiar suddenly perverted and twisted.
Death of the Outsider as well on that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of open world games, it is a diorama, it is a snow globe. And you traverse it in different ways. You can do different things within it. You have more capacity within it. But it rarely feels to me like the world is changing. And I kind of want that.
That's such a great pull. I like the first Arkham game is one of those games that I really loved from end to end. I haven't revisited it at all. But that notion of time and change, like being woven into the spaces and obviously into Batman himself and that very diehard, the suit is taking damage, Bruce is getting beat the fuck up. I almost just apologized for spoiling that Bruce Wayne is Batman a second ago. That almost just happened. That's where spoiler culture has taken us. But no, like that stuff is really, was really, really cool. And I think that's a great alternative that I'd love to see more. I get why more open world games don't do it, because most open worlds are bigger in terms of breadth than Arkham Asylum was, and so you'd have to do a lot of work to make big visible change, but boy would I love it. Patrick, anything come to mind for you in this space?
Nope. Don't have a good answer.
You know what? I respect the honesty, you know? I mean, like, this is the thing we just talked a lot about with God of War, right? Was like, I basically got my feet under me within the first 15 hours.
Right.
And then that was my build, you know? I think maybe if I had been forced to do some of those Valkyrie fights along the way, it would have forced me to engage with that stuff. But I get
I still want to
why
go back
you don't
and do some of that stuff. I have on the flip side of this reader who was sort of lamenting being sort of overpowered and then just running through the main stuff. My good friend of mine, like that's what he lives for. He's Assassin's Creed Origins. He has not. Well, I have to check in with him, but like as of like 2 weeks ago, he had not done a single one of the story missions beyond when the game opens up the map to you, and he just explored all the map, is doing like the side stuff and like filling out all the collectible things, and is like way well over max level, and has not touched a single one of the story things, because for him, he enjoys the story but just kind of wants to plow through it at a certain point, and so he just does everything that the game will let you do surrounding it and then eventually goes to the story and just
awesome
through.
Yeah, that's cool too.
Yeah, I've definitely had that experience with games. I think like the Xenoblade games on Wii U and on Switch were definitely games where it's like I felt really rewarded when I went back to main story stuff after having overleveled through side content, because not because the fighting was like a drag, but because it did just genuinely feel like the work I'd put in had paid off, you know? Also, I think because the side content did keep up with me and there was enough like higher level stuff to do so that the downtime segments or like the main story segments where it wasn't hard anymore did just feel like it wasn't all that overleveled shit. It wasn't just always I'm just stomping on everything. It was only in those story moments that I felt like that. And so that felt like a nice break. Which reminds me, there's actually like a non-turret sequence in Battletech that is really good, where you kind of, I'm not going to spoil the specifics, but I was a neat, you know, turret sequences in games happen when they are, as a way often to like let off steam, where it's like, oh, you just got through a really hard segment. Here's like, you just sit behind this turret and just like mow people down for a minute. You know, you just are like completely safe and you're going to feel really powerful. And it's kind of a stand-in as a metaphor for moments of just like really empowering the player for a moment or two, you know, for a couple of minutes. And obviously there are turret sequences that don't feel like that, but by and large, it's how those play out. And there's a version of that in Battletech that was really surprising and fun. So look for that. I'm curious to see what your take is when you get there, Rob. All right, let's talk about our waypoints for the week. Anyone want to recommend anything? Anyone have any movies or TV shows or games that they want to shout out that people should check out?
I have a quick one.
Sure.
I want to hear a quick I played a game today, actually free game on Steam. It came out last month. It's called Marie's Room. Mm. And it is a really cool little short story kind of walking simulator. You explore a person's room. I don't want to go too far into it. It is the two main characters are like two girls in high school, and it plays a little bit with time and sort of the idea of looking back on things and looking back on a time, et cetera, et cetera. Just really well done. You know, like an hour and a half long, maybe quicker than that, but you know, I'm the kind of person who likes to look at everything. You know, you kind of look at objects, you examine objects, you figure out codes, that sort of thing. So the gameplay is pretty familiar, but I like the story and I thought it was a cool little thing. So awesome. Marie's Room.
Marie's Room. Rad. Yeah. Patrick, Rob, anything you want to recommend?
I'm actually going to recommend the show that we ended up started talking about. I had something else, but then Rob mentioned this before we were recording the podcast, but the new HBO show, Barry, starring Bill Hader, is a wonderful little weird, dark comedy. It's kind of hard to describe it, like purposely sort of eschews genre for the purposes of surprising you, but the part, one of the things I love about it is the episodes are really short. They're like a tight 30 minutes. Like I am... this is partially a thing because of my limited time, partially a thing because I think the Netflixication of like allowing shows to just become longer and longer, not in service of anything, but that longer has been equated with prestige. Right. There was a great piece, I think it was on Vulture a couple of weeks ago, that was like really taking down this whole notion that like, oh, if your show is 64 minutes long, like that means it's even better. And like, I think just the by virtue of the same way that like you can write as much as you want on the internet, that doesn't mean that you're writing a great piece. It just means maybe you wrote too much. We often see this in, you know, TV's time limits were defined by commercials and blocks where before we had on-demand viewing, and I think things have kind of gone too far in the other direction. And what I love about Barry is like it's extremely tight, but it doesn't feel like you're not in that world. You're in that world as long as that story needs to be told, and I like it both for what's happening in the story and also because I respect shows that can like work within restraint and turn that into a strength.
Totally.
Yeah, I gotta echo this a little bit. Barry is it was a show I was really skeptical of because the premise of it is a really depressed and repressed hitman stumbles into a really shitty acting class in Los Angeles while stalking a target, and it touches something in him, and he's like, maybe this like it's a way that he can feel. Human. It's a way he can express himself. It's a way to actually get in touch with the feelings that he is denying or failing to process in his daily life. And the thing I was sort of struggling with for a lot of the show is like, okay, but he's a killer. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you can go the Gross Point Blank route, and I love Gross Point Blank.
I love Gross Point Blank.
Wonderful movie, but like everyone he encounters in that movie never challenges his Martin Blank's assertion that like if I show up at your door, you did something to bring me there. Right. Barry is like, no, he is a killer. Like he is straight up murdering people, and like
he's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And, the show doesn't, like, is this, you know, when we're having the conversation about God of War, about, like, you know, redemption quests and, like, making, you know, characters that were sort of intrinsically bad and, like, finding shades of gray. And, like, I think, you know, plots in general tend to go on the side of, like, turning bad things into, you know, morally gray or outright good. And I think Barry pushes back on that in a pretty smart way that just, like, constantly reminding you, like, nah, like, whatever this character says, like, he's bad, and, like, let's remind you of the fact that he is, and that whatever moral quandaries he is articulating through his mouth is not, you know, punctuated by his actions. And it's actually refreshing to have a character that is just, he's just a bad dude, and, like, you should just learn, that's just the story of what this is about.
Yeah, the last two episodes have had, like, as jaded as I am, I have found, like, there is violence in the last two episodes that is shocking and painful and affecting in ways that, like, I was completely unprepared for from the early episodes of the show. But I think it's a really good point, Patrick, this idea that, like, he actually is not a great character. Like, he is a bad person. I think something that I'm drawn to in shows like this, or like BoJack, or, like, my favorite, like, millennial dark workplace comedy, The Party Down, is that the characters, like, are allowed to suffer, and they do have, like, irreconcilable differences in what they want and what they value. And both the comedy and the narrative is about, like, reconciling those tensions and dealing with them head on and recognizing the places where, like, they can't be tidally resolved. Like, you can't wish them away. Mm. Like, as much as I love things like, you know, Parks and Rec or, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, a lot of those comedies are about, like, fundamentally everyone is a family, everyone loves each other, and the antagonists, such as they are always these ridiculous, exaggerated external forces who are just there to be, like, douchebags for the sake of it. You know, various forms of, like, Dean Winters characters. And that's fine. But something I guess I'm increasingly looking for in a lot of my comedy is sort of the sort of thorn on the rose, the little sting that comedy can conceal. And like, I mean, that's why BoJack is both so funny and also one of the like realest and saddest shows I've ever watched. Barry hits that for me. So like, and so does Party Down. Like that's the kind of comedy I'm really drawn to.
Cool. So it's two wrecks on Barry, it sounds like. Unless Rob, you also have something else you'd like to.
No.
Okay. I have a very important one this week. This Saturday is Eurovision. Eurovision 2018.
Oh, hell yeah.
Eurovision is, the very important part of my life. I watch it every year with my friends. It's not so important that I pay attention to it for 364 other days of the year. I don't watch any of the lead-up stuff. I know that I could go listen to all of the songs right now if I wanted to. But I prefer the surprise and the drama and the theater of seeing the majority of the European countries come together this year in Lisbon in Portugal to perform very gaudy ballads and ridiculous dance numbers and amazing laser light shows. It is not as much of a circus as it once was. There are a lot more like, hey, this sounds like it could be a James Bond single than there used to be. And, you know, there kind of used to be a little bit more on the kind of folksy or like
the Father Ted versions of
yes,
these things.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Or like the kind of more gimmicky, a little more comedy, a little more kind of burlesque in terms of its
everyone needs to read
like
the Anthony
vibe.
Lane piece on yes. Eurovision. Yes. Like Google Anthony Lane Eurovision.
100%.
That is crucial.
But it is, I think it shows in the States on Logo. You can find streams of it online. It is a blast to watch with some friends and a beer or two and maybe some chips and salsa. Just, you know, make a day out of it in general. It is a ridiculous, operatic, like nonsense day, that I really, really do enjoy. And there's always like some ridiculous act from some gigantic band with a guy with like a drum who looks like a gremlin. Like there's always some nonsense that happens. It's not like part of just the competition. That's just like a bonus thing. I always have a really good time and then debating with my friends who I think should win. And then there's the politics of Eurovision where all the countries are voting across national political lines on top of voting. Cause you don't just, so everybody in Europe can vote on this, right? And if you're, you know, I believe the British are still able to vote for Eurovision winners.
I was gonna ask about that.
I'm
actually
pretty sure they're still part of it.
Israel competes in that too, right? Like, I mean,
I think
they've
Israel
extended it pretty
compete.
Far beyond the Eurozone.
Yeah, at this point, yes. I mean, like Russia is in it, right? And so, like, that's one of those ones, right? Is like when you know you can see who is voting against Russia on things, not necessarily because of the quality of performance, but because of actions that the country took, or you can see how old wounds between countries that you know maybe used to like between Ireland and the UK, for instance, shake out sometimes. There's stuff there that is very interesting to watch and seeing the outliers and seeing the groups that none of which necessarily are the sorts of music I would listen to on a daily basis, but seeing them all together is just a blast. So I recommend people try to figure out how to watch at least a little bit of Eurovision this Saturday. All right. I think that's going to do it for us today. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At Danielle R.I.
Patrick, how about you?
At Patrick Klepik.
How about you, Rob Zachney?
At Rob Zachney.
As always, you can follow everybody here at Waypoint, twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/WaypointVice. And you can send us questions again to gamingadvice.com. Shoutouts to Bowen, as always, for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. We'll be back on Friday for more Waypoint Radio. I don't know that we're going to do a bonus pod this week. I don't know if we have something in the can. We've been doing a lot of those recently, so we'll see. But definitely look forward to us on Friday, where we'll talk more about whether or not we can drink clear or liquids or brown liquids, apparently. So
real stumper, yeah.
Truly, truly. All right, what do we say to him, Danielle?
Be good and be good at it.
Pelicans.
Sorry, I was drinking. Okay, I was drinking some coffee there. Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.